Hey guys, and welcome back to Straight Up, your go-to podcast for everything music and culture, where each episode we chat to the most exciting and influential people shaping UK music right now.
So today's guest is Camille, the singer, songwriter and producer, who if you don't know by name yet, you'll definitely have heard her music. She's Little Mix's go-to collaborator, writing everything from Shout Out to My Ex, which won a Brit Award, to Black Magic.
She's also one of Mabel's main collaborators and helped to pen hits from Don't Call Me Up to this year's West 10, which is actually one of my favourites with AJ Tracy. Her other hits include Clean Bandit and Demi Lovato's Solo. She's on the hook for Hedy One's recent hit Ain't It Different. And she's even been invited by the Queen Rihanna herself to submit songs for R9, which obviously is incredibly, incredibly exciting.
Basically, she's a huge deal with 4 UK number ones under her belt. And she's even about to launch her own record label, as well as spend more time focusing on her own pretty incredible solo career. She's also had a really unique entrance into the music business, having got her master's in economics and then working as a stockbroker for several years.
So over some gorgeous bottled cocktails from London Bar The Proofing Room, we chatted to Cam about why she decided to jump from the city to songwriting and what it's really like to write with Little Mix, from giving us the lowdown on her favourite theme of sexual sadness to how she made the girls fill out questionnaires about their most private experiences before writing one of their more recent albums.
Camille was also super open about how tough the music industry is at times, especially for women and specifically Black women. She talked about how difficult it was to get the respect she deserved when she started out, and about how crushing rejections from huge artists can be after you've written for them, or worse, what it's like to get no response at all.
Camille is a super inspiring advocate for getting more women into production, and she's doing a lot of work in that area, which she talks all about. Female producers make up just 3% of the most 100 top played songs, and female songwriters make up just 19% of that. So, you know, there absolutely needs change, and Camille really is leading the way.
Enjoy our chat. Please rate, review, and subscribe to Straight Up wherever you get your podcasts. And a big thanks to Marlon Percy for our music and editing.
Enjoy.
Camille, thank you so much for coming on Straight Up. We are so excited to have you here.
Thank you.
You are literally, I have been seeing you everywhere at the moment. I feel like 2020 has been your year. And these cocktails that you're going to have are really nice. They're like tequila and coconut. Ooh, with fizz.
Oh, I love tequila. You guys have got good taste.
From the proofing room.
Yes. Yeah, thank you so much. Thank you.
Pleasure.
And you've obviously had like a kind of unusual route into the music industry because you were a stockbroker before, which obviously we want to talk a little bit about later. But we wanted to jump straight in with Little Mix, because obviously your relationship with the girls is kind of how you made your name. And I know you guys have been working together since 2013 when you started writing for them. So like, how did that whole process start in the first place?
Oh my gosh. I think I was introduced to their A&R, their A&R person at Psycho back in the day. Her name was Anya, and she's so incredible. And this is really early on in their career, and me and Anya just hit it off. Like, she's just the most lovely person, and we had like a kind of similar energy. And she was like, "I really want you to meet the girls. I really want you to meet them." And I had just come in new into the industry. I didn't really know much about what was going on. And she was like, "I just want you to meet them. You're going to love them. They're going to love you." And they were there. And then we just went into a room together, all of us. And I was like, "Hi." And they were like, "Oh, they're just so sweet." And we just started talking. And from then, we just wrote loads and loads and loads of songs. I just remember writing loads of songs around that time. And not all of them became anything. But I think just having that much experience with the girls and like, getting to know them over a period of years, it's grown. So when people ask me this question, it's really hard to kind of tell where it started, but it's been a long time we've been doing this. Like, so I'm not surprised that now it's kind of like second nature. When we write songs, we kind of all know what we're doing and everyone knows how each other would feel. Yeah, but a long time, a really long time.
How did it feel like submitting your first song to them? Like, was it scary? Was there any feedback?
Do you know what? Not really, because Anya was involved. So, like, she would kind of brief me on stuff. And she was so good at, like, talking between me and the girls and with all of us together. So I kind of knew what they wanted. Very early on, I was able to understand what they wanted really well through Anya and Guy as well. It was another incredible A&R that they had. So it was just kind of easy. I don't really remember any period of being like, it's not working. Or I just kind of got them. I feel like as a girl, I really empathize well with other girls. I've always had this trait, I think, where like when any of my friends were upset with a guy or had a happy moment or whatever, I would just get it and I'd feel like I was them. It's really weird.
Very empathetic.
I think it might be actually, yeah.
Big empath. Because I read that you, when you wrote Shout Out to My Ex, you'd like given the girls like a questionnaire and got them to fill things out. Was that for that song?
Oh my gosh, that was for the album. I remember like for the album, the girls had to fill in like loads of questions and like the questions were really, really deep, but brought out a lot of energy from them on different things I had no idea about.
It was all like to do with like the worst things that had ever happened to them and that kind of stuff.
It was worst things, it was good things, it was all kinds of things. It was like sexual things, it was everything you can think of. But like it really, really helped because when we were in LA writing that album, I remember that questionnaire was like the template of the whole album.
Wait, really so do you have each of their like replies?
I don't know, forms? But no, I don't have them anymore. But we talk about this stuff all the time, to be honest with you. They're so open and like transparent. But yeah, they're just so sweet.
Do you write specifically for like, do you know which girl's going to sing which bit? Do you write with that in mind for them?
Oh my gosh, no. And this is probably the hardest bit because anyone knows recording little mix is a fucking nightmare because they all sound good on every bit. So for you to have to like pinpoint it and decide who's going to sing what is a nightmare. Like, because everyone sounds good. So how do you tell one person or how do you get this person to sing this bit? So usually it comes down to them going, just deciding between themselves who's going to sing what most of the time. Because everyone sounds
good. That must be hard if they want to sing the same bit, right?
It's so hard. I think that is the hardest bit about working with Little Mix as a band is because they're all such good singers, honestly. But yeah.
So what does the average session like look like, say when you were doing the album in LA, like how many days is that, how long does it take to do like one song on average?
I am quite a lazy bitch, so honestly I don't like to spend too much time like slaving over songs. I just don't like, that's just not me. So I'll typically like to spend no more than like a week or so getting a bulk of songs ready, but a lot of the times we've recorded albums, they haven't had loads of time. So typically we might only have 1 or 2 days because they might be on tour or whatever. And I'll usually like to bash out at least about 10 songs in that time and just get loads done. So that's what we did with this album as well, with Confetti. We just did loads of songs in like a day.
And then how many do you use versus like how many get thrown away?
It depends actually. I feel like most of them luckily get used because I feel like we're in sync now. It wasn't always this way, but if we speak a lot, we've got a WhatsApp group, so we'll do ideas back and forth. By the time we get into the studio...
What's it called, the WhatsApp group?
It's called... I think it's called LM Sexy Gyal. I think something like that. I named it. But anyway, we're kind of in sync now, so it's all good.
And when you're writing about stuff that you know is going to be... Like, I know on Shout Out to My Ex, obviously the big, like, news line was, like, the Perry line about... texts, do you think like that kind of exposure makes it harder for artists to be like honest in their songs, or do you think it's like a really good opportunity to be able to say something publicly in the way that you want to say
it? I think it's a good opportunity. I feel like all artists need to be able to just be open and honest and share their truth. I think a lot of artists want to be like that now because you can't really hide anything anymore. So I think it's actually easy if you just be like, look, fuck it, this happened, I'm human, this is a real life situation going on in my life because I'm a real person. And it's normal, and I think everyone goes through stuff. So the more you share, I think sometimes the better with things like that.
So I was thinking about it earlier, though. I was like, can you imagine, like with Mabel, for instance, who you wrote, like you've written with a lot, but particularly, like, Don't Call Me Up, is about her ex who kept calling her after she'd like told him not to and he'd done her wrong. Imagine being that ex that like that's number one, you hear it everywhere and you literally can't even like
I know
at all.
But that is the best revenge, honestly. That is
just like in a club you literally can't even dance. No. Everyone knows it's about you or your friends.
Yep. And you know it's about you. Like even if you try and hide, the truth will always prevail and you'll feel so shit inside. And I love that. Especially when you've done something really bad to someone. Or I love doing that. I think that's one of the perks of this job is you can
the worst is if they actually like love the song as well.
Yeah, but they won't be able to like it. They won't be able to like it now, will they? Because it was about you.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's so fun. But equally I like writing about positive things. Like I'm not just this evil songwriting bitch. I actually like to write positive things for people and uplift people, and yeah, that's that I love doing as well.
Who's your favourite artist to work with? I know that's a big question.
Do you know what? I would say of late, because it changes a lot, because I get really inspired by different things at different like seasons of my life, I guess. But right now I would say Anne Marie, just because she's so warm spirited. Like, she just bought me a present for my studio. She's just so sweet. She got me a lamp. I'm just putting it together. Oh, I can't even show you. She's just so sweet. And I messaged her the other day and said I was feeling a bit down, and she was like, oh, your present will lift you up soon. I was like, what present?
Oh, God.
She's so sweet. But
are you in your studio, right? Are you of your studio?
I'm in the studio now.
Oh my God.
So is your studio, I kind of want to get onto that later because there's lots I want to ask you about setting up your own studio. Yeah. But is your studio at your house, or do you have the two separate?
No, I've got two separate. So I've got a home studio set up, because if I did not, I would literally go crazy with ideas I can't put down. But I've got this setup that I did in conjunction with Metropolis Studios, who, this is just an incredible building to be in.
Oh my God, I went there like before lockdown.
Did you?
Insane. Yeah.
It's amazing. Chiswick.
And it's such a nice place to go to.
So tell us anyway, to go back to Mabel, obviously West 10 has been massive this year.
I didn't even expect it to be this big. Honestly, a lot of the songs that I'm part of, I never expect them to... You never know which one's going to go off. Like, of all the songs, West 10 is very catchy, but I never thought... Like, I hear it on the radio probably more than a lot of other songs I've done this year, which is wild. But it just goes to show, like, I think AJ and Mabel just killed it, obviously. And
yeah.
I think I really enjoyed making that song because it was part of a camp that me and my friend Fred Gibson put together.
He's Fred again.
Fred again is obviously one of the most incredible producers ever to touch the earth. And we had like a camp running, and we did like two songs in a day. I feel like we did West 10 and we did like Ain't It Different with Heady One in like a day or 2 days. And it was just vibe. So I think when I hear that song on the radio, it makes me really happy because I know that it was just good vibes. Do you know what I mean?
So tell us about the first time you met Mabel.
The first time I met Mabel was in a cafe, actually, because, like, I think her management and mine were like, you guys should meet and chat and shit. And we were like, yeah, okay. And we went and met, and she was just so sweet. And we didn't write again. We didn't write for a long time after that, actually. I don't know why, but we got in finally. And I remember from, like, the first time we probably wrote together, I feel like that was Don't Call Me Up, I think. I think, was it? And my manager saying, yeah, that was the first time that we that we wrote. And that was the first song, really, that we wrote. And it did so well. So me and Mabel write a lot over text. And we just...
How does that work? What, like, not even WhatsApp? Just
No, text, because with text, it's just easier to... I don't know why I actually text. That's a good question. But we just voice note each other over text.
Oh, okay.
and we get a lot of ideas done that way. We actually finished writing West 10 over text, if I remember correctly, in lockdown.
And have you ever like written a song with her that's been prompted by something funny that happened, or when you're like out and about or on a way home from a night out, do you ever just like turn an experience that you're talking about as friends into a song there and then?
No, actually we haven't done it that way, but we definitely, I feel like when we're writing, we tend to write about very bold situations that have definitely would have happened to any given girl. And that's how I think we write. It hasn't been so much, this happened to me and she will write about it. It's been more like, yeah, nah, 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 nah. It's been like just...
We hate men.
Yeah, typically we do like to moan about fuckboys, but I think it's been more that kind of vibe, I'll be honest. Yeah.
So how does like the relationship tend to work generally when you're writing with someone? Do you write songs and then like offer them to people that you could imagine them on the track? Or are you always like being specifically commissioned for a particular artist, be that on a camp?
Oh, okay. So it's very different. Teams? It depends on the artist. So like I know a lot of A&R people that work at labels quite well now. So they'll usually just hit me up and be like, oh, Cam, can you work for a few days with this artist or whatever. That's probably usually how it works. Like they'll either hit up me or my management and we'll just get in the session. But I do write a lot of songs that don't fit an artist, or I haven't had an artist in mind, and I'll try and pitch them. But I find that that's probably less successful. I feel like the more cuts I've had have come from being in the room with an artist or being in the room with a producer who is about to literally go with that artist. That's been a bit more successful for me, I think.
What about when you know you've written what you think is going to be a hugely successful song. Obviously, now that you're a solo artist in your own right, how difficult is it being like, actually, I just want to keep that for me? And like,
oh,
maybe they're waiting.
It's so not difficult. I've never found that difficult because I feel like I have tried to have confidence and think, I'll just write another one. I always try and think like that because there's been so many moments where I've, you know, heard a song and I've given it away knowing that it'll be fine, I'll do another one. Like, I just believe in what I'm doing and I try and focus on what I'm doing. So I've never really had that problem. But I do think it's important to hold things back if you really do believe in it, though.
Have you done that before? So you've written something that you've just loved and thought, actually, nah, I'm keeping this to myself. I just can't.
There was one where, I can't tell you what song it is, I'll get in trouble, but there was one where I had that moment right when this artist was about to put the song out. And I was like, no, actually, no.
Oh, God.
I was like, actually, no. But it was too late. I changed my mind, but it was too late. So I had to say goodbye. Yeah.
Oh, God.
That was hard.
I didn't realise you'd get, like, all the way, yeah, to that stage where it's, like, been recorded and everything.
Neither did I. Because, like, as I'm saying, I thought I was chill, but clearly I wasn't. And that song, I...
At the last minute.
But anyway, now I just... I think I'm on my own lane with myself as an artist now. So I kind of know what I'm doing. And I don't think the two would probably happen. I don't think that would happen again. I think I'll be all right.
Yeah.
I hope.
And I know for, like... for, like... massive artists, obviously, there can be like a submittal process. I know you've mentioned before, like, submitting for Rhiannon's upcoming album, and obviously you don't know yet if that's if they're gonna, well, or maybe you do now, I don't know.
I don't know anything. I'm so upset. I just want a Rihanna song so bad, and I think everyone in the, you know, in their dreams would want, like, if they haven't had it already, but I don't know anything.
I want you to have a Rihanna song.
Yeah, you should have a Rihanna song.
Please, can we all just, like, pray?
We'll let into the atmosphere.
Yeah. So how did that come about? Like, because I heard you on a podcast, on the Patricia Bright podcast, talk about how, like, even Rihanna can open your DMs. And I was thinking, like, wait, did Rihanna open one of your DMs?
Oh, my gosh, no. Or... it didn't even work that way for me. I wish. It was more like just through her label and her management team. And she was running a few camps and sessions and stuff. And I managed to, like, force myself into one, probably, like I usually do in life. And then I just managed to, like, meet her and when she was there. And that day I will never forget. But... no, honestly, it was more just through the label stuff. But so many songs have been written for her at this point. I just don't even know. Like,
did she just come in to, like, oversee and say hi to everyone?
Because she's so nice. And she came in to say hi to everyone. And I was...
how many of you were there? How many writers?
On that day, I think there were, like, two writers and maybe two producers in the room.
Oh, okay, not lots. I'm, like, imagining, like, 12 writers all, like, sitting there at...
That's not how it was. Can you imagine if there were 12 writers in a room? I think that would literally be hell. Can you imagine everyone going... like, no way. Oh, my God, girls, no. Literally, in a room, in any session, you probably get at max 2-3 writers. After that, you're pushing it, because when someone's going to piss someone off, do you know what I mean? Like, everyone has to get their ideas out and sing some
but
shit.
Then what about when you see, like, you see 9 writers on a song?
Oh, and Travis Scott, they'll have like 65 names credited. I think it's on Sicko Mode, has like 65 people.
Do you know how many things are sampled in any given song usually? Like, if you even say something, I could say Zigga Zig Ah from this song, and I'll have to feature all the writers that wrote that song, and then we have all the producers. So the producers are probably sampled. So it's like, it just comes down to what, like, Travis samples a lot of shit in his songs, a lot of different productions, and he's so cool, stuff like that. Like the way Kanye will sample stuff from a million other songs, and that's why you'll see, like, so it could be that, it could be people that have jumped on board to finish writing the song. It could be,
so what happens in terms of, like, sharing the money at the end?
Oh, like... girl, what happens?
Like, it's like a percentage for each person.
You just got to try and split it the best way you can, really.
But isn't it surely not equal? Is it like who wrote more?
Yeah, it comes down to that, or it comes down... it can be equal, but it depends on the song and, you know, the situation. As long as everyone's getting what they think is fair, usually, I think it can work.
Because then does that mean everyone's, like, scrabbling to write the, like, most of the... more of the, like, more part of the song than other people?
You can get that. Like, you definitely can get that. I've seen that in the past, so I'm not going to lie. But I think a lot of the time now, I think even with me, I'm just grateful to be on anything that, you know, if I feel like something's going to go... I said to, like, literally some producers that I'm working with on, like, some like a big American artist's project, I'm just like, if I even get a breath on this song,
breath,
just a breath, I don't even care about the percentage. I don't care about anything. So it's just, you've got to weigh it up as what's important to you.
So guys, we just wanted to take a very short break to tell you all about this episode's fabulous sponsor, The Proofing Room, which is the Spitalfields bar whose bottled cocktails are now available for delivery across the UK and are, quite frankly, the best thing that I drank throughout lockdown. For those of you that don't know, The Proofing Room is the bar from the team behind Soho's award-winning spot, The Vault, which is actually super, super special because it's hidden behind a bookcase in the world-famous whiskey shop, Milroy's. Thoroughly recommend you check that out.
So I actually went to The Proofing Room a couple of weeks ago with my boyfriend, and it is such a cute little date spot. So small, so cozy, candles everywhere, super intimate. Definitely recommend booking that for a special occasion. Like the bar menu, the bottled cocktails are inspired by the simplicity of the classic highball. My favorite is the tequila habanero, which is a light, delicious mix of tequila, coconut rum, habanero, caraway, and orange. And it is the one we were actually drinking with Cam in the recording.
Oh my God, it's so, so, so good. And also been trying it out with my boyfriend and he has been obsessed. However, I think I've got to say that actually the peach and chestnut is my favorite. It's bourbon, chestnut, peach and ginger. And it's just like super festive, really Christmassy feels. I love it. And I think the best thing for most people to do is just to order a mix and match of the bottles, because trust me, they're incredible and you'll love all the flavors.
Each bottled cocktail is priced between £14 and £17 and arrives ready to drink, ideal for those Christmas Zoom parties that we'll be having. Orders can be placed at theproofingroom.co.uk and delivery is across the UK within 48 hours. The Proofing Room have very kindly offered a 20% discount across all bottled cocktails for Straight Up listeners. All you need to do is use the code STRAIGHTUP20, that's all lower caps and the number 20, that's 2-0.
The bottles are brilliantly large as well. You'll get three serves from each. So do stock up and please drink responsibly. Thank you so much to The Proofing Room. So yeah, you were saying before that you kind of don't know when you've necessarily written a number one, like you know something's good, but you don't necessarily know how big it's going to be. What about say when you were doing like the Clean Bandit song with Solo, you had no sense when you're in the studio, like this is going to be like really massive.
Solo, I knew was sick, yeah, but I just didn't think it was, I can't explain to you, like, there's songs that you know you can feel you've written a good song. It's almost like, okay, some days you might wake up and you make the bed so well, like, the cushions are just sick, and everything looks amazing, because I love making my bed really nice. See, like,
that never happens to me.
See, what? Okay, well, you know some days, like,
your cushions look extra nice.
It just looks nice. Or some days you do your eyebrows so sick. Like sometimes my eyebrows are just, you just know when you've got your eyebrows, right?
Yes, I can relate to
that. Okay, but it doesn't mean that you're going to get an award for your eyebrows that day.
Yeah, but you will get a compliment.
You'll get a compliment and that's how you know. So when I play the song to people, my management will be like, this song is sick. But that still doesn't mean I'm going to get an award on my eyebrows. It just means my eyebrows are sick that day. The awards just come, it's got nothing to do with me, and that's the weirdest part. It's from so many other factors. It could be the time of year. It could be what else is on the radio right now. It could be that artist had a crazy like moment in the press and their vagina is half out. It could be anything that, do you know what I'm trying to say?
Interesting, yeah.
It's so wild.
It's funny with that song as well. I mean, forgive me if I'm wrong, but from what I've read, it's like basically about like masturbation, right? But it's also like a radio song that kids love.
Yeah.
And it can kind of do both.
It is.
How do you like sneak that kind of more risque material into your work? Do you think it's just a case of being like really like tongue-in-cheek and fun with puns and things like that?
Do you know what, I try to. I feel like it's a lot more okay now to say what you want because of streaming. Like you don't have so many rules. There's a lot of artists who are just big on like streaming platforms, for example, and they can say whatever they want. But when you have more like radio-based artists, you have to be careful about how you say it. But I just wish that it could be as free as, you know, we write it, because I love saying sexy things in songs. And I feel like when you're growing up listening to music, you want to hear that stuff. That's how you kind of learn about stuff in a weird way.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
And the guys have it.
The guys have it.
They got Jay Haas.
Do you know what I'm saying? Like, I feel like, I don't know. That's me. I've been trying to sneak in sexual shit for a long time.
I wonder, I don't actually listen to the radio enough, but did what? How was WAP on the radio? Like, could they play that?
Babe, listen, that song was like,
yeah, I was going
to
say.
Right? Like, but they played it every day. They played it every day. I think when you're forced to play it, you have to play it, so.
Because you've like coined the term sexual sadness in reference to that song, which I know is something that you came up with one time when you were writing for the script as well.
Oh my gosh, you have receipts. You have receipts on my shit. I love this.
Now, we've got a Google Doc that we're staring at.
Oh, I love it.
Your achievements.
Oh, this is so sweet. Do you know what? Sexual sadness is a really interesting term because I think most people obviously still feel the emotions of, like, you know, just feeling sexual but can't act on it at a given time. And that could be because they're brokenhearted or because they're lonely or whatever. A lot of people would have had that through lockdown, can I just say?
Yes.
So it's a real thing. And I think I noticed songs that kind of spoke about that used to do quite well, were doing quite well at the time. So I just thought, oh, this is interesting. It's not just your obvious, like, I want to fuck you tonight. Or like, it was more like, oh, I want to, but I can't. But it's just that conflict in your mind that we go through. I like writing about that.
Kind of leans in quite nicely as well to Dua Lipa, I think, who obviously you've worked with, because she's kind of queen of the sad banger.
Oh my gosh, yes.
And obviously you wrote Cool with her and with Tove Lo, who I know is crazy and amazing. Oh my gosh, and I'm sure that was a lot of fun. What was that session like?
Do you know what? Like, again, that was one where we weren't even together. That was like a patchwork song, which is how... Sorry to disappoint you. It happens like that a lot of times with songs. You'd be always so surprised because... I think she heard the song and she wanted to tweak some bits, and then her management and label tweaked some bits. So it was very like, and then Tove joined in, and then I heard bits they did and I was like, yeah, this is sick. And it was just one of those ones. But we have worked together a couple of times before that, actually, and I'm sure we'll get in again. She's so lovely.
And how difficult is it, like, when it's your song, to kind of keep your ego in check if people really want to tweak things or change things that maybe you wouldn't agree with? Do you just kind of have to let it go and be like, once I've put it out in the universe, it's just
for other
people to work on?
Do you know what? It can be so difficult. I think with me, I kind of see it like there's a line at which I usually would say, oh, do you know what? It's changing too much now. That hasn't happened very often to me, though, but I have seen that happen a lot, and people, you know, being quite upset about certain things changing. But for me, as long as the artist is happy and I'm still on the song, as long as I haven't been written off the song, I'm chill. Like, I'll just go on to the next thing. Do you know what I mean? It's important not to be too precious in this industry because so much can change. Like, you just got to go with it.
So I heard you say on Patricia's podcast that, like, you submitted songs to Beyonce's album and, like, they didn't get on that time, sadly.
Oh, yeah.
But, like, I'm sure there's some... How often does that happen where, like... I mean, someone like Ryan Tedder, obviously, who's also, like, such a respected and, like, successful songwriter, said that often he'll send songs to, like, artists and they just won't reply.
Yeah, all the time. That happened to me just the other day.
Really?
Just the other day, that happened to me. And do you know what? I actually hit the artist up about it because I was pretty sad. I was like, why, you didn't even... She knows who she is and I love her to death, but she didn't hit me back. And I was like, oh, did you not like it? And she was like, no, I did. I forgot. I messaged you back. Blah, blah, blah. And I was like, oh, okay, fine. But I just think it happens all the time.
How do you pick yourself? So to say, like, the Beyonce thing, right? And I need to ask you more detail about that because you said on Patricia's podcast that you sniffed the walls of her studio.
I did. They smelled so good. They smelled like roses and oud.
Oh. So where were you?
Beautiful.
Like, in her house?
So she's got a massive, like, office with, like, loads of studios in and stuff. I feel like Beyonce security might be listening to me right now, so I probably can't say much more because they listen to everything. But honestly, it was the most beautiful studio I've ever seen and just beautiful space. Yeah.
But you didn't meet Beyonce?
No, because she was there, but what? I didn't even get to. That's what I'm trying to say. Don't you guys understand how much I want to write with her?
Oh my God.
No, it was so close. But honestly, I think that for me, do you know what? I actually love in life when things don't happen because it is so, so humbling and it's so good for you to always want to achieve something. And I know that these things happen to me for a reason. So Beyonce, I will always strive to get that, but I didn't get it. I really wanted to be on that project so bad.
How do you find out when you're not, do you literally find out that you weren't on it when the album's out?
Yeah.
That's such a brutal way to find out.
Brutal. It's like you know those movies where like you want to see if you've made the cheerleading team, and you go on the board and look at your name's not fucking there. That's literally how it felt. And everyone else that did get on the team is like, oh my gosh, yay! I've got this, I've got this. And you're like, oh, good for you. Do you know? That was literally me when Beyonce's album out. I was like commenting on everyone's shit, like, oh my gosh, congrats, congrats.
So happy for you.
I'm so happy for you. But inside, I was dying of sadness. But do you know what? I'm so happy. All the people that got on that album are my friends. So I'm so happy to see that it was so successful.
But your turn next.
My turn next, please. Thanks.
Yeah. On the flip side, from working with like your greatest idols, are there ever artists, obviously you don't have to name them, but do you ever turn down artists? Are you ever approached by teams or labels and you're like, no, actually, that doesn't feel like a good fit for me?
I will only turn something down if I feel like I won't be able to nail it. Because honestly, I'm quite picky with like just my energy. Like, I've learnt this over a long time. There's certain things that I just know instinctively now I'm probably not going to nail that, and I like to keep the confidence I have in myself quite high.
What do you mean? Because I can't imagine you not nailing something. What does that entail?
Oh, that's so sweet. But I do not nail things all the time.
Is it just in terms of like in terms of style? Like, obviously you have a specific style, so is it just the genre for you, it's just like not your thing?
Yeah, it's usually style. Or if I know that like someone else, if I know they already have a writing team around them that is like them, I probably won't try and like get myself in there just because I want to write on it. I think it's respectful to like let artists do what is working for them without you having to write on it just because a label might want you to or something. So like, I'm very picky with that. I think I'll write on things which make me feel good and things I know that I can make work.
I was gonna say, when you have made a number one, like, is it always, I know we've talked a bit about like, you know when a song's good, but like, do you specifically ever write so that it becomes number one? I'm talking about like the mechanics of the song.
Yeah.
Like, I know you've talked about writing for TikTok and like being able to like mine the entertainment value of a song and like adding in samples and stuff specifically for that. So is there now like is there a formula you can kind of nail to know at least you can get in the charts?
I think definitely, it doesn't mean it will always work, but I definitely think when you put a chorus at the front of a song, because like the data from, for example, from Spotify on how quickly people turn over onto another song is outstanding. I feel like it's like less than 7 seconds or something before they'd be like, okay, bye, and onto the next song.
Yeah, because I heard Amnike was saying like R&B obviously loved the like long intros, but you can't get away with that
you
now.
You can't do that anymore.
People are gone.
People have not got time. They're onto another playlist. You've got to try and get their attention. So I definitely try and put a hooky part of the song at the beginning. Try and get to the chorus as soon as possible. A lot of pre-choruses I'm noticing are getting cut.
Interesting.
Like, they're gone, babe. The pre-chorus is dying. And so is the middle eight. The middle eight is dying. These things are just gone. And then you just want a really catchy post-chorus, I find. So that's kind of it. As long as the structure is quick and to the point, I think it can... And you've got, like, a catchy moment in the song.
And are there things that you've carried all the way through from when you first started? Because obviously it's a skill that's natural, like it's an art. It's not something that can be learned. It can be honed. But to go back to how you even started as well, is like a kind of mad career change from finance to songwriting. Like, how did you actually get into songwriting professionally in the first place? Like, what made you leave the city? Were you doing both at the same time?
I was kind of doing both at the same time. I hated being in the city. I felt like I was like, I keep on saying, I felt like I was like Neo in the Matrix. I just did not feel like this was for me. And then I was hanging around in studios, and then I was writing with this team of people who like wrote some hits back in the day, and they were kind of like helping me learn how to write.
How did that happen? Did you just like network and reach out to other writers?
Yeah.
Like, how did you even build a community of like musicians?
Well, I kind of got into this particular studio through my dad, actually. He put me in touch with someone, that's usually how it happens. And then I would just go there after work, and then soon I
was your dad in the music?
No, but he knew how much I wanted to do it, and he just was like, okay, just go here and after work and see how you I don't know, he was just trying to help. But
what does he do?
Oh my gosh, he's in property. Like... well,
oh my god.
My mum, well, they're both, my mum's retired now actually, but she has an MBE because she was in business and was like doing incredible things, and my dad is in property and in restaurants. So I've got parents who are very encouraging and very aspirational. And I knew that I wanted to be successful, just not in finance. That just wasn't for me.
Have any of your former colleagues heard you on the radio, heard your stuff and been like, what? How did you,
do you know what?
How did you make this leap?
Probably more my school friends, because at school and like sixth form and at uni even, like everyone knew how much we were all like so devoted to education. Because I went to a private school and all we knew is like, oh my God, you need to get straight A's, otherwise you're going to die. That was literally...
Was it one in London?
It was in Croydon.
Oh, okay.
It was in Croydon. But, I mean, a lot of them sometimes will hit me up and be like, oh my gosh, Cam. Like, oh my gosh, what's happening? You're not... like, my friends from school, and I'll be like, oh, hi. So that bit is really funny. It's really funny.
Have you ever taken one of them to, like, an insane party and just watched their face?
Well, do you know what? A lot of my closest friends, I've got, like, a really close group of friends who are all still my school friends, and... One of the fun, like most amazing moments, I think, recently was like when I sung with Little Mix O2, I brought them all into the booth. There's like, you can have like celebrity booths, darling, up the top, but you can sit and be fabulous. And everyone came and was like sitting up there with my family. And then Stormzy came through and everyone was like, oh my God, it's Stormzy. Also, they were so gassed. Like, can you imagine for your friends to have that moment? I was so happy for them. And
yeah, for sure.
It was just a beautiful night. It was so nice.
Oh my God, amazing. Is there anyone you've got proper starstruck around? That like, you can't speak when they speak to you?
Oh my gosh, there's so many, babe. I have to say, I remember one time I saw Cheryl Cole. Before we started working on... Well, this is after X Factor. Because I worked on the X Factor for a few years. So I'd always see celebs on there. But I think probably Simon Cowell and Cheryl, just because I was used to seeing them on TV so much every week, like to be chilling at Simon's house and to be like up close to Cheryl, because she honestly is just so beautiful. There's some people in life who are just gifted and it really upsets me, because like, how are you this beautiful with like...
Yeah.
Certain people just have it. Do you know what I mean? Like, yeah. Like Rihanna is actually that beautiful. Like there's just, I just don't...
I have that
like,
when I look at like Maya Jama.
Babe,
like, wow.
She's so... Do you see what I mean? Some people are just beautiful.
Yeah,
like naturally, but we all have it. I think some of us just need a bit more pizzazz sometimes,
a bit more makeup.
And by the way, I'm saying this about my damn self, because I feel like it takes me a minute to get a hot pic. I have to take like 100 million like different pictures. Some people just be taking one and post, like what is that?
I can only take a good one when I'm drunk, because then I'm like confident enough to like you know like what I'm wearing, posing. Yeah.
So what's your relationship to social media like?
I saw on your Twitter that like you'd retweeted someone and said like, I can't believe some people are so rude on here. I mean, I couldn't see the tweet, whoever had been rude. It's now deleted. But like, do you get a lot of trolls?
I'm actually lucky that I don't get a lot of trolls. I only can think that's maybe due to the fact that I just only like to write positive shit. So if you're going to troll me, then you really are like just... Because I've got nothing bad to say.
Scraping the
do you know what I mean? But I know a lot of people who do get a lot of trolls, and it is so sad to see that. Like,
well, of course, with Jessie from...
Yeah, did you watch Jessie's documentary?
Of course I did, like, honestly.
Did you know, like, all of that?
I'm so glad
you
saw
it
on the
documentary.
Me and Jessie will always talk about, like... Oh, we always do it to each other. Like, I'll say something about myself I hate, and she'll be like, "Come on, you look beautiful," and I'll do the same with her. So we definitely share this thing where we're always lifting each other up. But I know that she faced a lot of stuff, and all artists, every single artist I've worked with, will have trolls. Every single one, and it's crazy to me, and that's why I hate social media for that side of it.
So, what was it like actually being a vocal coach on The X Factor? Was it an overall great experience? I mean, I'm sure you're going to say that because you're lovely.
No, do you know what? It was good and bad. It was bad because we were so tired. Like, the hours on that show that everyone, the whole of X Factor, I don't know how these people do it. It was exhausting. But it was so good because free food at Simon's house. Yeah. But no, also it was amazing because you get some...
Simon's house looks insane.
Babe, okay, so this is where I first learned about Jo Malone candles at Simon's house. I love Jo Malone, but every time I smell a Jo Malone candle, I think of him. And he had like the massive, the drum ones. Like, babe, I'm talking like
Oh my God, I know.
Yeah,
like,
the ones that you can step into, like, that cost £1 million. That's just in his bathroom. He's just amazing. He's such a classy man. But I mean... Yeah, it was so good because you're getting to meet people, and almost I was learning how to A&R on that show, because you'd see someone picked from complete obscurity, like maybe just doing something so mundane that they hate and have this burning desire to want to be an artist. And then you get to help them and you have to do it really quickly. You have to figure out their artist proposition. You have to give them the right songs. You have to work on their vocals. So I was doing this with like 20 or more artists and I learned so much on that show. I remember I came out and wrote Black Magic probably straight away because I started to learn what audiences wanted to hear. Because remember, every week you're seeing what reacts on the show and what songs react. I think it taught me a lot about the punter's ear, which I think is the most important thing you can learn as a songwriter, is what do punters actually want to hear? What does like a van driver want to hear in the morning on the way to work? What does a child want to hear when they're singing with their friends in the school playground? Like, that's the kind of stuff that I learned, I think.
What does a van driver want to hear first thing in the morning? I feel like you know the answer.
Something catchy.
It is something catchy. It's just melodies. Like
something to whistle along to while they're driving along.
Like, okay, for example, let's look at a perfect example. So Uzo, Emenike's song, Emenike and Joel Corey's song, Head and Heart, right, is probably one of the catchiest songs of all time because it's just, it's just catchy. Anyone can sing that. Anyone in any language, and from, you don't have to be able to sing, you can sing that song.
And so when you were, who were you training? Like, when you say you're training 20 people.
Oh my gosh, yeah, all the contestants. Loads of contestants on the show coming through.
But at all the stages?
Yeah, at all the stages. So we had them from,
oh my God,
from the audition stages. So before they go into auditions, after that, you have to kind of work. It's like an actual, like, people don't see behind the scenes.
But you're not
scenes.
Working with like the people that are rubbish right at the start.
Oh, you?
No, this is like when they're like training everyone at Simon's House and
I
stuff.
I think it was like kind of before, do you know what? It's actually before that. So it's before Judges Houses. I'd say it was early on, like maybe boot camp stage we would all start. So there's still some people who are a bit suspect on there and you still got to be so like, oh, hey, you're great.
Oh my God.
It was so funny. It was really fun. It was a really fun experience. I loved it. Absolutely loved it.
And so obviously you're making more and more of a mark as a solo artist in your own right, which is amazing to see. And I was wondering, obviously you've witnessed firsthand working with these massive stars, like the pressures of fame. And how scary is it knowing that like you're putting more and more of yourself out there? People, like, you've been behind the scenes for a bit, mm-hmm. but now people are going to recognize your face, mm-hmm. like you're becoming, dare I say it, famous.
Oh God.
How are you preparing yourself, like, mentally,
I feel like,
for
I'm
that
not.
Exposure?
I feel like I haven't done any preparation for any of it. But you know what, if I'm honest, I've been around a lot of famous people and seen how they've handled it, and I'm not really bothered, to be honest with you. I feel like everyone's famous now. You can go on Instagram and be famous. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's kind of no big deal being famous anymore. It's really weird. Like, you can literally just be famous tomorrow if you wanted to.
Have you always wanted to be in the spotlight? Was that something when you were younger? Was your dream to be an artist, or was the songwriter dream something that actually did come first?
I wanted to be an artist, but I got shut down, babe.
When you were young, what happened?
When I first started trying to be an artist, I was not ready. I was not there yet. And I think right at that point, it was just not the right time for me, I think, to be an artist, because I wasn't very good. Like,
who'd you get shut down by? Like, in the industry?
I think a little bit, yeah. I'm not even going to lie. It just wasn't the time. And I think now, for so many reasons, like, as a Black woman, I think it's so much more supported now, I guess, to be a Black woman in music, whereas it wasn't before as much. So now...
So you just didn't feel that there was, like, space?
There definitely wasn't space. There definitely was not space for a Black woman in the UK.
How were you made aware of the fact that there wasn't that space? Like, in terms of, like, yeah, how did that come about? Was it just not people not replying, people not respecting you when they were speaking to you, not answering your emails?
Yeah, you wouldn't get a lot of responses, or you wouldn't get a lot of support. It was kind of assumed that, like, if you're a Black female, probably isn't gonna work or, like, cross over to mainstream. So that was really sad to be, you know, suddenly aware of, because I'm just thinking I wanted to sing, do you know what I mean? Like, a lot of Black girls are, and not getting the same support. That was quite tough. However, I knew that I would still be able to force my way in if I started writing, because I just do not give up. So I thought, I'm going to do it this way, learn about the industry, and then I'll find my own route. And I feel like I have finally got there.
And through that, so do you think you've really learned to, like, what you want to do yourself as an artist in terms of development? Have you honed your kind of brand yeah. or persona. Yeah, if you put it in
I feel
way.
Like I definitely have. I feel like what is interesting with me is my brand, I'd say, is kind of becoming more who I am. It's not me having to even do a persona, which is sick, because now I just feel like I'm just doing myself and not having to be someone else. So it's kind of all come in line and in sync.
So are you going to kind of like split your focus between the two, or do you want the solo artist stuff to take front seat over writing for anyone
else? I think I'm going to do everything, because I think I can't not write. I think I'll go crazy, but I also have to be able to do my artist project to like fulfill my own weird dreams. So yeah, I'm going to just do everything and see how it feels, really.
Because I saw on Twitter you were saying that now, like, you have been working so hard to make sure that you're co-producing as many of the songs that you write because you're saying there's such like an imbalance of women in production in UK music, and I'm sure music across the world.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
Why is that? Like, I was looking at the stats. It's like 3% of women in the top 100 most listened to songs.
It is so bad. And it's only when you sit and actually look and pay attention to it, you realize how bad it is. And that's why, even like one thing I'm trying to do with Fred, my friend Fred, we've set up with She's the Music this amazing new venture just to find female producers, because it is literally that bad. So
are they there? Is it just that they're there and they're not getting in, or are people just not interested in being
confidence
producers?
And training,
do you know what I think? It's almost the same as saying, are there a load of female mechanics? Like, I feel like a lot of females might want to do it. Maybe not as many as men. I'm just saying. I'm just throwing that out there. I don't know if it's the same number, but they are there. There's loads of female plumbers. There's loads of female builders. There's loads of female Uber drivers in this country, which for some reason is a real taboo. I don't know why women feel they can't Uber drive.
Well, I rarely
see. Yeah, you go to like Lisbon and like every cab you get into is
driven by a
woman.
And then suddenly
in London you see like one.
This is what I'm saying. It just goes to show, I think, when you're shown that something can be done, it's much more encouraged, supported, and it's just more people want to do it. And that's all I'm trying to do in this country, is just show that you can do that, and then maybe we will see more of it.
Did you get pushback when you were trying to produce more? People being like, no, this is my
oh
thing.
Oh my gosh, yes.
You can't do it all.
Yes, yes. I'm not even going to lie. I'm a very honest person, yes. But I think what I started doing was just making more songs on my own first, production-wise. Even if I started a production, even if it sounded a bit shit, it was my production. And I would send that to a label. And then when they liked the song and the production, it can grow from there. But I just had to fight my way in.
So you're kind of giving yourself more standing.
Yeah, but then also I had to learn how to produce. So it's not just like...
Yeah, that's quite hard. Like, I'll just do this in a couple of months.
I know.
Like, surely to be a...
I did learn.
Like, Logic Pro takes years.
Well, I've kind of shortcut it because everything's on YouTube, babe. And I stole all the plugins from all my producer friends as well. So I was just stealing so much stuff. But I feel like, honestly, there's no excuse for any woman to not like pick up a keyboard and just start learning some stuff. Just try.
You said before as well that a big part of it is like re-educating young women that work in music or female songwriters, and just helping them understand what they're actually contributing to a session.
Oh my gosh, yeah, because a lot of the time I was in sessions on the piano, creating sounds. I was on a synth playing stuff. I was creating actual bass lines and integral parts of songs. And it was only kind of in recent years that I've been seeing some management and we're like, oh, it's actually production. And I didn't even really know what I was doing. So it's not encouraged or supported. That's what's bad about it. I think a woman can be in a session and be doing just as much as a producer and not even be encouraged to do that. So it is about understanding how talented we are and amazing we are, because we're women and women are just absolutely amazing, obviously. But I think it's about people seeing other women do it. So that's why I'm trying so hard to get my name on production and get my name on Spotify. So when there are the girls that go and check the credits, they do see a female's name there. I even wrote my name in capitals for that reason. Like, if you go on Spotify.
Oh, yeah.
Is that why you styled it?
Yeah,
like
because
that?
I want people to see a that's female cool. in the production. And Camille in capital letters. Yes, bitch.
It's not going to be a man's name.
No,
is it?
It's like, a woman. And I think women need
so
that.
Feminine.
Women really
I
need
it.
That. It's just a sea of amazing, talented men and not enough women in that sea.
Who's your dream collaborator?
Pharrell. I still have not worked with Pharrell. Please, Lord Jesus, sweet baby Jesus, let this happen. I still have not worked with Pharrell. I have to work with Pharrell before I die. Please. Can we make this happen?
I'm sure it will happen.
It will happen.
How can you make
I
it happen?
I have to work my way up, babe. I've got to work there. People don't understand, you have to put in hard work. If I want to work with Pharrell, I need to get some hits in America, like big hits. And then I could be like...
How do you do that? How do you like break the other side of the pond? Is it just your label like putting you in touch with the US counterparts or like...
I think...
You've obviously, like we say, got what, more than 15... like top 10 singles here, so
I know,
it's hardly,
but I feel that that doesn't matter thing. Because I feel like over there it's a
is it the Billboard?
Do you know what I mean? It is kind of a separate world. Like I think American, you know, music makers might look at you over here having success and be like, oh, that's cute, but do you know what I mean? Yeah. I don't know if it means you're gonna go over there and have a hit. You have to actually just break through and make them, and it's been really hard breaking through into America, but I feel like I'm slowly starting to make progress. And one thing about me is I'm so honest about this journey. Like I hate when people will be like, oh yeah, it's so easy and no. Like it's so hard. This is so fucking hard sometimes.
What's the hardest thing for you?
I think the hardest thing sometimes is writing so many songs and sometimes nothing happens with them. They just sit in your Dropbox. It's like, what the hell is happening with all these songs? It's a very, the hit rate, I'd say, as they call it, isn't very easy to achieve, you know. It's really... That's the hardest bit about doing this and having the strength to still write more after having knockbacks. I wrote a song the other day, so funny actually, oh my gosh, I don't think no one minds saying it, but I wrote a hook on KSI's new song and I just heard the new one and it's an amazing song. But I mean, it's that happens a lot, I think, as a writer. You're right.
But it's not your hook.
It's not my hook. I think actually it's Amena Cave's hook, which he's a G, and Craig David and everything. He's my boy. But I mean, that's how it is. You have to get used to not getting your stuff used and be totally okay with it. Just move on.
Yeah. And I guess as well, like, I find that's a big financial loss to you, right? Or do you get, like, how does that affect...
Yeah, do you get paid for a session that a song doesn't materialise out of?
My hook do not get paid for session.
So it's all commission?
It's all down to if you have a publishing deal and you have an advance which you live off, or if you don't have that, you have to just be, I don't know, what are people expecting you to do? I think the mayor said that people in the music industry need to retrain if they're not earning. That was his last comment on it.
Yeah.
So it's just really bad. And this is another thing a lot of songwriters are trying to fight for, is having some kind of remuneration for this amount of work you're putting in and not really necessarily always seeing something. It's just not easy. When you get there,
really
it
tough.
Can be okay and you can work your way up, but you just have to be willing to write a lot of stuff.
So to end on, you have been an amazing guest, but why don't you tell us about maybe like your proudest achievement to date?
Yes.
Oh my
no
God.
Pressure. Just the biggest thing you've ever done.
This is so hard. I think my proudest achievement to date has to be, I think, setting up my label and my publishing company, because I think for me that's something that I always dreamed of, has been able to help other people, and I think that will give me the facility to be able to do that for the rest of my life. So I think that for me, I'm always looking to the future. Of course I've got a financial background and I'm thinking about a pension and all these things that you know when you're younger you're not necessarily thinking about. But for me, that allows me to have the confidence to like, okay, I can think about kids, I can think about my future, I can think about all these things, which a lot of musicians can't necessarily think about. And that's the thing that gets me up every day and makes me feel really good that I can help other people. All I want to do, I just want to help someone else now, because I feel like I'm there and I'm happy with my life. So that's what I want to do, like find talent that would never have gotten a chance, especially people of colour, because we are just so unfortunately oppressed in this country. It's really sad. And I want to help people have a chance and have a voice. So that makes me so happy. Of course, all races are welcome to my label. But I definitely want to help people who haven't got a voice, for sure.
100%.
Yeah.
Well, we can't wait to see who
I'm
is
so excited to see the
artist.
Thank you. I'm so excited.
Well, Camille, thank you so much. And cheers for habanero cocktails from the Proofing Room.
Thank you so much. This has been such an amazing interview, honestly. Thank you.